Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to the Banging Book Club, the fortnightly podcast where we read books about sex and or gender and talk about it. I'm Hannah Whitten.
I'm Lena Nobbs.
And I am Lucy Moon.
And this month we read Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski.
Woo!
Woo! Yeah. I like that that's now
become. And come we did.
Oh. Question, how did we read the book? I used a Kindle.
I had a physical copy that I actually bought from the Women of the World Festival a couple of years ago after I saw Emily talk on a panel, and so it's signed by her.
And that's why we're reading it, isn't it? Didn't you suggest it from last year?
Yes. Yeah.
I read a physical one, although I lost the book halfway through the fucking month and had to buy the ebook for a little bit.
No.
So pissed. So I'm now a proud owner of both.
Well, Emily, you got your money's worth.
Yeah, enjoy that.
Enjoy. So a bit of a background on this book, because basically there's a lot of information in this. This is our big sexy science non-fiction book of the year, I think. The subtitle is The Surprising New Science That Will Transform Your Sex Life.
Ba, ba, ba.
I'm gonna.
Why did you both do like a Dell booting up sound then?
Ba, ba, ba. Oh, yeah.
Is that Windows?
It was meant to be like. Dun, 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 dun,
but I didn't do it. Your vagina is Dell laptops. Dun, 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 dun.
My vagina is purely MSN Messenger sounds. it nudges you when you're just like, what are you doing?
Oh, God. So the blurb says, after all the books that have been written about sex, all the blogs and TV shows and radio Q&As and YouTube videos, she forgets, how can it be that we all still have so many questions? The frustrating reality is that we've been lied to. Not deliberately, it's no one's fault, but still, we were told the wrong story. Come As You Are reveals the true story behind female sexuality, uncovering the little known science of what makes us tick and, more importantly, how and why. Sex educator Dr. Emily Nagoski debunks the common sexual myths that are making women and some men feel inadequate between the sheets, underlying almost all of the questions we still have about... Blah, 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 that doesn't make any sense. Underlying almost all of the questions we still have about sex is the common worry, am I normal? This book answers with a resounding yes. We are all different, but we are all normal. And once we learn this, we can create for ourselves better sex and more profound pleasure than we ever thought possible.
Doesn't it sound a little bit like when you're selling like a holistic retreat? Like, it really does sound almost spiritual from that blurb.
The world is dirty. Come and be clean.
Yeah.
Do we want to do our sound reviews?
Yeah.
First.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't thought about this yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Middle class satisfaction. Yeah. Like somebody gave me a diluted orange juice at church.
Oh, like with like really a nice orange squash.
Really orange, yeah.
Sorry. Mine would be like I think that's mine.
Okay,
sound like a creaking door.
mine would be That's fine.
That sounds very heavily opinionated,
oh, wow.
Hannah.
I'll explain.
I can't wait to unpack that oof.
It's the, I get it. Like, this has been really good for me, then like, okay, we get it.
Yeah.
Okay, we get it.
Yeah.
One of the things that we have like already said to each other, because we do talk in between these podcasts, it's weird. I know. We're friends.
We also exist outside yeah. of screens.
But one of our points was that it is very repetitive.
Mm. Yeah,
I has learnt lots, but
that's a really old school meme reference.
But it, yeah, very repetitive.
How many pages is it, do we know?
It is, there's a lot of index notes, but it's about 340.
Yeah, I feel like she might have lost some readers. Like, I think there's lots of people that wouldn't pick that up because it's so big.
And it didn't need to be. Like, it was, one of you guys said just now, like, it's kind of like you're in a lecture, so you do absorb it because it's said enough.
Yeah.
But it is very, like, point quote analysis.
Yeah, I feel like she's either trying to reassure us and reiterate or reassure herself and just be like, okay, this again.
You can definitely tell she's a teacher. So she teaches at a university, and so you know that, like, in order to get information to people, like, repetition really works. And I have to say, like, I have learnt so much from this book. And you know how they say that the highest form of learning is then, like, teaching it to others.
Mm.
But since reading this, I have been telling all of my friends about so much of the stuff I've learned in here, which clearly means that it's gone in enough that I know how to explain it.
Mm. I can do the bare bones of this book now off the top of my head and have told at least 4 people, including my 31-year-old cousin who has a baby earlier today, all about her sexual accelerator and her sexual break.
Yeah, and I think that, like, says a lot about this book, but I think my overall review is, like, don't bother reading it, find a friend who has. and talk to them about it.
Or, like, I think that if I had a huge amount of anxiety around these issues and was really nervous and had to be talked through it and reassured the whole way, then it would be really helpful.
Yeah.
But because we're reading this in a context where, like, we're just doing it for book club and we're, like, interested and we want to get the information out, it was harder to extract the information.
This is a real self-help book that I think can genuinely help.
Yes.
I was going to say, if she'd named it something like, how to have better sex for women, let's say, a proper clickbait title would have sold 1 million copies.
Yeah,
because
that's
it has all the content. It's like the Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus thing. Like, it's
just needed to be marketed to a basic audience.
Yeah, but if it had been marketed like Men Are From... Well, no, it needs to be marketed to people like my mum. To be totally honest.
Because it says the surprising new science that will transform your sex life. For me, I'm like, there wasn't that much science in it. Like, in my opinion.
Really? I thought there was quite a lot of science in it. But it didn't transform my sex life because I was content with my sex life.
Yeah, I guess so. It explained a lot because I've talked to this before, but, like, because I used to have vaginismus and, like, I used to completely shut down during
sex. Didn't know you used to. Oh, I know, I did know.
Yeah,
I
like, know that. Like, oh no, wait, it's all coming back.
We have had this conversation.
In flashes, it explained a lot, like, I wish I'd had this 5 years ago, because it explains a lot about what my sexual breaks used to be.
Yeah.
I.e. Christian guilt and
fear
of being walked in
100%.
On.
100%. And, like, a lot of my issues with sex when I was not in a relationship, like, that was clearly explained in this.
Yeah.
And that was really beneficial. It would have been beneficial to me 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm. Yeah. I know a lot of our listeners don't read the book and just listen, so I feel like we should explain what the sexual accelerator and the brake are for people. So your accelerator is your SES, sexual excitement system, I think it is, and then your brake is SIS, sexual inhibitor system. And so the idea is that the sensitivity of your accelerator or your brake is kind of innate within you. Like, you can't really change how sensitive they are. So you imagine that anything that hits your accelerator are things that will turn you on.
And some people's is very sensitive.
Yes. So, for instance, Lena has the most sensitive accelerator out of the three of us. And then it's
proven now, because there's a quiz in it, basically.
There's a quiz in the book, and you get a number at the end.
And I have the least sensitive accelerator. So, like, while some people can walk past someone in the street and go, oh my God, I'm horny, I'm almost never horny. Like, someone has to initiate sex with me, and then I
someone
can get into
someone has to put
it.
Their foot really hard down on your accelerator.
And I will hit 30 miles an hour max. Like, it does. Like, it's
I just want to get there safely.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean I don't love sex.
So you're never going to get caught on a sexual speed camera, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. I am so safe in the safe zone.
So, like, me and Lena, like, a feather touches our accelerator, and we're like, hello.
Yeah, I was saying, like, I can just stand on the tube and at somebody's armpit level. level, smell the right kind of armpit, and I'm like, there.
That's so interesting. But obviously, everyone's got different kinds of things that will hit their accelerator or hit their brake. Yeah. So the brake is the opposite, which is like what turns you off. Mm. And some people will have a really sensitive brake, which means that just the slightest thing, like maybe a bit of stress, or it could be a mental state, or it can be like something external. Yeah. This is goes yeah. for both the accelerator and the brake.
You can hear someone outside the room.
Mm, yeah, right. And then you're like, oh no, or like your partner's still got their socks on, and that's a big turn off. Or like you can taste cigarette smoke on their breath, and that's a big turn off. Or
even mental distractions, yeah. Like what's that thing they referred to as when you're watching, you're out of body almost when you're having sex and you're like observing yourself a bit.
I don't know. Wasn't paying
attention. Poltergeist.
No, I'm going to look it up in the book while we wait. But it's where you feel kind of, and I have this a lot, like you feel really out of body and you're like, oh, do I look good here? Like, what's happening now? Like, how do I look? How do I feel? Do I feel all right?
Yeah, so
what am I going to have for dinner tonight? It's like what I do in Quaker music.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I really don't know
how Quakers. My thoughts are really loud.
Maybe Quakers have really good sex because they can obviously focus really well.
Yeah. Definitely.
Wow.
Learned a lot about, learned a lot about sex from Quakers. No. Anyway.
But yeah, with the accelerator and the brake, how sensitive or not sensitive they are is something that you can't massively change within yourself. But what you can change is how much stuff is hitting them and what is hitting them.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah. Basically.
And also not blaming yourself when a brake is happening. Because sometimes, I swear, like this book helped me in that I'm like, oh, like sometimes like I'll get turned off during sex or something will happen and like I don't know what, and then I'm like, oh my god, am I attracted to this person? Or like maybe I've made the wrong decision. I'm like, whatever. And actually I'm like, oh, I'll probably just hit the brake.
Yeah.
It's chill.
And for me it's so normal, like I'm just so used to the fact that I won't really have sex outside of a relationship because that is the brake for me is so on in casual sex that I just, it's not enjoyable for me. So I have to be really comfortable with someone. I have to really trust them.
Mm.
And it's that personal trust that then lets the thought of the brake. Yeah.
Which explains a lot about, like, it's just kind of like, I think we, like, because there's polyamory and lots of other kinds of sexualities where like you feel comfortable with lots of different people and also you like might not feel comfortable committing at all.
Mm-hmm.
And like that might all be inherent and like planned out, and we can't control it.
Yeah, for sure.
But then we can also swing between them, I guess. So,
I think that's probably like the main thing that dear listeners need to understand. Yeah.
Context.
I hope we explained that.
So also part of what she says is that these accelerators, like you're not only just born with them, you can like form them in early childhood.
Yeah.
So if you're like caught masturbating when you're like six or something, and like somebody's like, don't do that, that's dirty, then that's how, like, one of the ways you can form sexual breaks. Whereas if somebody just encourages you or says like, okay, stop that now, we're gonna go out,
that's still context. So that is very much like, so the idea of masturbating like isn't a break for me because I was never punished as a child. Or, like, maybe when I was younger, it was a bit more of a, like, a break because of my internal thoughts about masturbation. But it didn't actually change how sensitive or my break was or not sensitive it was.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that, like, for some people, that will hit a break, and for some people, it's not. It's kind of like how the whole, like, sexually relevant stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
So, like, when you're growing up, you learn what's sexually relevant and what's not. But some people find something sexually relevant and others don't. Yeah. So for me, like, just reading books, like, for buying a book club, I'll be, like, reading, like, the most scientific bit. But I'm like, this is about sex. It's sexually relevant. I'm aroused.
Yeah, I was reading this book and I was like, points. But that's, because it's sexually relevant, not because it's sexually arousing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another great thing that we learned in this. But it was more of a reaffirmation from Bonk that we read last year, which like included that study about non-concordance, which was like also included in this book.
Non-concordance
as well.
Is another really important thing. Like your genitals can do one thing, your brain can do another.
Yeah,
that's
and
normal.
In this book, it said that 50%?
Yeah, it's 50%.
There's a 50% correlation between like how a man's body is reacting to
To sexually
relevant stuff, and then how aroused they actually are.
Oh no, it's genital blood flow. So there's a 50% correlation between genital blood flow and being turned on, and with women there's a 10% correlation between genital blood flow and being turned on. Oh
my God. Yeah, and genital and being turned on, what we mean by that is that the person in the experiment like registered consciously that they were turned on.
Yeah.
So they were like, I am turned on. I am not turned on.
Yeah. Which is, as we discussed in the bonk one, like how the argument of women who experience sexual assault, but they were wet though.
Yeah.
Is completely like it just a non-argument. Work. Yeah.
So we have our ideal women. So there's people that we grew up with that were like, I want to be like that person, or that person's my hero or my heroine, or I want to be like this princess or this bus driver or whatever. But she also talks about something different, which is having an ideal sexual woman in our head. So somebody that we, it might not be connected to our actual heroes and heroines, but somebody that in our mind represents who we want to be sexually. And she said there was two kinds. There was either the kind of loud, available one, who's very much like intersex, always aroused, like ready for it, seeking it out. And the heroines that are too clever for sex, she says, and the people who are like quite prudish and stuff. And I thought that was quite interesting because it made me think of like this really sexual characters I'd seen as a child. So like in Looney Tunes, the bunny, what's her name?
Oh, and she's
immediately comes to my head. Lula?
Am I making that up?
Lola Bunny. And she was like really sexualized and like had a really big butt and was really like sexually available. And then I remember thinking like, oh, that's like a sexy bunny. That's what a sexy bunny is. And yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if I can think that far back. I think it's affected my sex life in a way that you're like... So the ideal sexual woman that I absorbed was the readily available, always turned on mentally and in genital response, always up for it, very sexually confident, da-da-da-da. And so I think the way that that's affected my sex life is when I don't quite match up to that. I'm like, there's something wrong with me, or like, why can't I be like that? I want to be like that. So I think it kind of like, there's probably a effect. And I think for most people, like, these like stark ideals of literally like, you know, the Mary and the Madonna, like that's what it is. Like, they're always going to have like a negative effect on people's sex lives, I think.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what... I thought about sex so much as a teenager, but I never enjoyed it and never... So there was a big expectation, like, I was known as, like, being slutty, like, I was a slut. I wasn't, but, like, that was...
What's a slut, Lucy?
Sorry, like, so I said you weren't a slut, in inverted commas.
I don't know. It's a really weird one now,
isn't it, to think about? But that was an identity I held close to myself, and I was like, I want to be a slutty one, like... I want to be doing, you know, being the one who's winning at Never Have I Ever. Like, that that kind of but that was because I associated sex with being cool. Like, I thought the coolest people were the kind of people who were, like, effortlessly sexy, didn't ever chase anyone, weren't really up for it necessarily, but were just, like, really cool with whatever and really confident and just, like...
And didn't you think imagine... of sex as, like, a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, if they were doing it, they'd probably be very good at it just because they naturally were. And so, like, when I didn't live up to that, which evidently no 17-year-old was going to, or 16-year-old, I was like, oh, but that's, like, the person... You know, that's the ideal, is, like, the really cool one.
One of the things that I just remembered that I loved... learning in this book, and you just reminded me of saying the fact that like you kind of like put yourself out there a lot but you never enjoyed the sex was the bit about like different kinds of arousal. There were three, but I can't remember one of them, but it was like the eagerness stage and then the enjoyment stage, and there was like another one, expectance. So the expecting stage is like, oh, there's something sexually relevant, and you kind of from previous context of when you've experienced that before, your brain like automatically joins the dot, like that's sexually relevant, that means sex is about to happen or whatever it is that's about to happen. And then that can go to eagerness, and the eagerness is like when you get to a certain state of arousal in which you're like, I want to act upon this arousal, like I have the desire to have sex. And then the enjoyment is the like actual pleasure, and they're all separate. And I think that kind of blew my mind and helped me a little bit, because I'm like, oh, that would explain why sometimes I've only ever experienced like two of them. She does this great little triangle of like what you would experience like if you just had like expecting an eagerness or eagerness and enjoyment or whatever the combo is. But I was talking about this to some friends and we were all like, oh my God, yeah, we've all had that experience where we've been like, oh my God, I'm so horny, I just really want to have sex, and you have it and you're like, that wasn't very good.
Yeah.
Like I didn't enjoy that.
Is that because you didn't have the expectant stage?
No, it's because you didn't have the enjoyment stage. Because you weren't enjoying it. Like, it was literally
just... It's like when you masturbate to kill it off.
Yeah.
Sometimes, isn't it? Like, I don't know. Yeah. Just like, done, good, can stop thinking about that now.
Whereas sometimes you can have, like, enjoyment without the eagerness, whereas, like, the sex just kind of, like, happens, but you never, like, initiated it and you never pushed for it. It's just something that happens and you just... And it was, like, a pleasurable experience.
Mm.
But I thought that was really interesting, like, separating those things.
Mm. And then I suppose if you get to the, what's the first stage?
I think it was expecting, I don't know if it's like one, two, three.
Enjoyment. Is that like, is that basically like the scene in Atonement where they pin each other against the library?
I don't know if it's a stage as in like come together kind of
when it's all working.
I can't remember if it's like one after the other. I don't know if it has to be like in a particular order.
Yeah.
I wonder
if
where I could find this.
Because you can be eager but not expecting.
There is an index. This is what we love.
I thought was really interesting. There was also the bits about how something that I've always really wondered is like, why can sex feel a lot better with people when you're in an unstable relationship as opposed to when you're in a very stable, happy relationship?
Attachment styles.
And it's the attachment thing where it was explained that like, because you, it's effectively because you feel like you're going to lose them or you've had that distance, you're trying to like create closeness artificially through sex, so that can be really unsatisfying sex but yet make you feel all these feelings
because it's like aspirational. It's like, I'm excited because I know what I want to happen. That's quite depressing.
Completely. Really.
So you
want to
have sex with exes that you know it's not gonna work with because you're excited about the fantasy of fixing it.
God, that's fucking depressing.
Why do we do this to ourselves?
I know. But yeah, I've got loads of notes of like, oh my God. Oh, also, everyone's got the same parts organised in different ways.
Oh my God, the thing that blew my mind was the equivalent of the labia majora was testicles.
Yeah, I was really surprised.
I was like, wait, what? Because we all know that like the penis is the clitoris and the clitoris is the penis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like every other part that we have also has an equivalent. I don't know what you call it.
Yeah, I'm labia, really surprised about that.
Testicles. Was it labia
majora? A question that I often ask when I'm drunk, why do men have nipples, got answered in this, didn't it? I was very satisfied by this.
Evolutionary byproduct.
Yeah.
In the same way as we have something else.
Homology.
She said that was
nipples on females are vital to the survival of the mammal species, blah, 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 blah. So evolution built nipples in right at the beginning of our fetal development. It takes less energy just to leave them than to actively suppress them. So evolution is lazy and just leaves them on men.
I find nipples really funny on men, and on women. Nipples are just
odd,
aren't
they? Yeah, but
they're
supposed to be like functional on women, but they're like, oh, I've already grown them now.
Yeah.
Just leave them there.
I found the bit about the eagerness and stuff. So apparently it is a bit of a sequence. So something sexually relevant happens and your brain goes, hey, that's sexually relevant. That's expecting. And if the context is right, your brain also goes, hey, that's nice. That's enjoying. And if the stimulus is nice enough, your brain goes, ooh, go get more of that. That's eagerness.
Amazing.
I love it. She's got funny ways of phrasing things.
There's so many metaphors.
I've got, I think I sometimes experience eagerness without the enjoying. And that definitely came up a bit later in the book when we were talking about...
Is that because of your breaks then? I feel this has given me a language for how to talk about. Yeah.
Oh my God,
this
is
good.
Me and Dan talk in this language now. Like, I've like taught it to him and I'm just like, oh no, you're accelerating.
Can you make me something?
And like spontaneous desire.
What do you want for dinner, dear? Something sexually relevant. Like oysters.
Oh my God.
Strawberries.
Strawberries.
Chocolate. There was a bit about like desire later on, which I was just like, oh my God, that's me. Which was like, it was something about experiencing desire before I even know that I'm aroused. Mm. So for some people, so the desire thing was like the spontaneous desire, people who, like, out of the blue are horny, mm-hmm. and then responsive desire, which means that, like, you kind of need a bit of wooing or whatever. Lucy just put her hand up. And then there's context dependent, which is kind of like most people are either responsive or context dependent. Mm. I think it said in the book it was like 15% of women are spontaneous desire, yes, when actually like the ideal kind of desire is spontaneous desire, but like most people aren't that. Mm. But I think I have spontaneous desire. And basically there was a bit in the book, and I really want to find it. Yeah, but it basically was just like how some people with spontaneous desire can feel desire before they know that they're aroused.
Mm.
And I definitely feel that sometimes, because I'm just like, I won't feel aroused, but I know that I will in 5 minutes' time if I start, like, yeah. to do something.
Oh, I've totally,
I've had that, yeah, completely. And so I can be like...
You're like initiating it with yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, exactly. And I can be completely not turned on, can be in, like, the completely non-sexually relevant situation. I'll be like, should we have sex?
Yeah. That's the way that I'll ever initiate if I initiate. I'm like... This is the convenient time. Do you want to have sex in 10 minutes?
Because I've got to go.
I love scheduling and sex. But yeah, but I'll just be like, oh, should we just have sex? And, you know, if whoever it is like, oh, I'm not really in the mood right now. I'm like, yeah, neither am I. But I will be. I will be.
Yeah, I can get, you get yourself there.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Mm. The fact that, like, I don't know, the order in which things happen don't always make sense.
Can we talk about all the analogies in the book? Like, all the many, many metaphors. Like, the garden.
Oh, my God,
and the sleeping hedgehog.
Oh, my God, the sleeping hedgehog.
So I can't remember what that is, so please explain.
Yeah, I can't remember what the sleeping hedgehog is.
There were so many.
If you wouldn't...
treat something like you treat a sleeping hedgehog, right?
Yeah, it was about being gentle with something. But now I can't remember.
Giving it a little stroke. I would love a sleeping hedgehog.
It's like not talking about stuff, wasn't it? So it was like... You got to talk about, like, if there's a sleeping hedgehog on your chair, you've got to talk about it with your partner. If your partner doesn't know the sleeping hedgehog there, they might sit on it.
Yeah. You've got to pick it up, let everyone know that it exists, give it a stroke, look after it. It's something about, like, trauma or dealing with trauma.
When you
trauma
say it like this,
something.
It doesn't sound like a great analogy. But at the time, I was like, yeah, it's like a hedgehog.
I understood the garden one.
Yeah,
garden
I like
one.
That.
So the garden one is that, like, your garden is just some soil. Right, mm-hmm. And the soil that is in your garden is kind of like the body that you were born with, and kind of like your innate mental state. So like your brake, your sensitivity of your brake and your accelerator and things like that.
Mm.
When you were a young age, other people plant stuff in the garden for you.
Oh yeah.
So ideas of how you should be, so how, like, your sexual life should be.
Yeah. So it could be parents, teachers, media. Culture, religion, like all of these other people and things are like planting ideas around sex in your garden. Mm. Then when you get old enough, you can be like, don't like that one, or that one doesn't really grow very well in my type of soil.
I prefer tomato plants.
Yeah. And then you can pulling out weeds and planting your own new stuff.
Mm. But you should do that, because you can't turn around in your 40s and be like, well, I don't know where that plant came from, don't look at me. It's like, well, you've been fucking looking after this garden for 20 years.
Exactly, yeah. That's the thing. So it's like recognising that a lot of these ideas that you might have around sex that are like damaging your sexual well-being, like you and your Christian guilt, for instance, like you didn't plant that.
Uproot that shit.
Write a book called Me and My Christian Guilt.
I absolutely like Mr. McGregor'd that shit. And yeah. Like getting a pitch
for it.
He
really
like, right.
did.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's exactly, it's about, rather than kind of like then constantly living with this like struggle that you might have around like your sexuality or like the way that your desire works or whatever it is, like, yeah, it's not your fault that those ideas are there, but you shouldn't water them.
Mm.
This is the garden analogy. Shouldn't water them, you shouldn't give them sunlight. In fact, you need to uproot that shit and plant your own happy tree.
If we go to this for Bangy Book Club merch, gardening tools.
Oh, yeah.
To dig out your insecurities.
Should we do like a piece of performance theatre about a garden?
Yeah, and we can bring, we can put real fertiliser on it. What attachment style did you think
of that? What was the attachment style?
The healthy one?
Obviously the best one.
So when I was reading it, I was in a point where I can say this online, I think. I mean, like in the early days of a relationship, I told my boyfriend I love him. He hadn't told me he loved me. So I was like, I'm the needy one. So I was reading it. I was like, who's going to leave? And then as soon as I read it, I was like, no, I'm really healthy.
Yeah. It's all about context, isn't it? Because again, I think I definitely, when I was younger, I was definitely the insecure attachment style. Is that the one?
The yeah,
one
I'm the insecure. When we were trying to... Yeah.
There's an insecure and then there's avoidant.
Yeah, and so yeah. when I was very younger and I was getting like my first boyfriend, I was really like insecure attachment. Like, do you love me? Are we going to do Valentine's Day? What's going on with that? Like, oh my God, do you think we're going to get married? And then I was like, on like single, I was very avoidant and I was like, this is a one-time thing. Like, shady Jane. And then now I think I'm healthy. But maybe you have to be all of them in secure your life attachment. To like...
Well, something that reading this book really did point out to me is that my attachment style has changed since my last relationship. 100% in my last relationship, it was a very healthy attachment style. Mm. Now I verge on insecure because of how my breakup went. And I thought that was really interesting because I hadn't... It was literally like, oh, in my brain. My brain was like, aha, this is why you feel different in this one to the last one. And I thought it was really cool.
Because you've been damaged.
I've been damaged. No, but like I just had a... Like it was like... taken from me really fast.
Yeah.
And that, I didn't think that bit had much of an effect on me. Mm. But actually long term it does. And that's good to know.
Yeah, because it's good to know like how you've ski-whiffed yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So you can change, then. As we were saying. Yeah. Like, it's not like you have like, one
accept and know why and know that it's not your fault.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're not stuck with the one you've got.
Yeah.
Therapy is great.
Shall we say what our numbers are in the little quiz that was in the book for our accelerator and break?
I think we might tweet this quiz actually. I'm
really curious.
Okay, so just... everyone can do it even if they don't have the book.
So okay. It's out of 20.
It felt like a SATs test because you have to like circle the ones.
It's
out of 20 and if the higher the number, the higher sensitivity of the break or the accelerator basically.
Mm. And there's lots of statements. And you have to either kind of like confirm or deny them according to you. So the stuff like I have to trust my partner to become fully aroused. If I'm worried about taking too long to become aroused or to orgasm, this can interfere with my arousal. Questions like that.
Yeah.
Well, statements that you.
For my inhibitors, my breaks, I scored 10 out of 20,
which is bang in the middle, scored 6. Which means there's not a lot that can hit my brakes.
That's really impressive. I scored 14.
Oh, wow.
So there's quite a bit that can... Well, it's like, I'd say it's kind of... Mm. It's all context-based.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
But, like, yeah. Mm. So, like, 14 out of 20.
And also, I think maybe your brakes are different with different people.
Well, the way it says... So the example they give is, Camilla's low SES. That doesn't mean she's not interested in the idea of sex. It means her body... Oh, no, this is the other one. Don't worry, ignore me.
Yeah, Camilla's the low SES. You're high SIS.
I'm high SIS and medium SES.
And then the exciters, so your accelerator. Mm-hmm. I am a 17.
See, I'm a 19. And I'm like, how am I more sexually aroused than Hannah Witten?
No, but she has a lower... nothing on the brake.
Oh, yeah, that's
yeah,
true.
That's the difference.
Also, the SES, the accelerator, is out of 24.
Oh, is
right.
It?
Yeah.
Ah, so I got 12 out of 24 then.
Yeah, so I'm like... So you're in the middle.
I'm in the middle. You're in the middle. But like, low, I guess.
Yeah.
Not crazy low, but low.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah. Now you know us very well.
Yeah.
There's a bit of dialogue in this fictional part of it that reminds me of like how I can be when the breaks happen. So these fictional parts are there to demonstrate things that she's saying in the text, which is really helpful. But some of them are, I think, quite unrealistic and quite funny. And like one of them is when she initiates sex for one of the first times and Patrick turns her down. Olivia initiates and Patrick turns her down. And she has this self-doubt and she's like... she's like lying there at night and she's like, oh my God, I've initiated sex. And he says, no, maybe I'm some like hungry sex fiend. And she says, what if all the things I've ever told myself about my sexuality are just an invented master to the, are just an invention to mask the truth that actually I'm totally just this bullying using my sexuality to manipulate you? What if I'm out of control and, like, a danger to myself and others? And I've definitely had that where I'm like, if I initiate sex and the other person doesn't want it, I'm like, I'm a monster.
Really?
I'm like,
I always wonder if that makes people feel insecure if I'm like, no, not right now.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Yeah, because I always feel really bad. I feel insecure both ways.
Like, I've been in situations where, like, I really want to have sex and the other person hasn't, or they've really wanted to have sex and I haven't. And so, I don't know, it's good to experience both sides, to be able to, like, deal with the crushing rejection.
Yeah, I know, it is. It's like...
But you have to kind of get out of that, and you have to, like, know and believe that...
Yeah. But I think it's funny that, like, there is definitely some parts of me that still retain this, like, patriarchy thing where I'm like, if I ask for sex... Then I'm like, oh my God, I'm such a sex fiend. I need to stop bothering people with my needs.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Yeah.
It's quite funny.
The fictionalized bits in each... chapter. I think they were useful in order to, like, real life demonstrate or whatever, but they were so cringe.
Yeah.
They were so cringe. And I think the thing that always made me laugh was, like, did Olivia and Patrick manage to talk through this aspect of their sex life? We'll find out in chapter 8. I was just like, what is this?
I think we should definitely make a cartoon of their lives.
Also, I thought it was interesting, like, this was definitely geared towards an older audience of people in...
Drekker?
Yeah, the bits that were examples of sex lives, effectively. Yeah. Because they're like... And then they went on a weekend away.
Yeah, and then they have houses. Yeah. Another thing is, as well, I think our generation is, like, staying in this kind of, like, house share university state a lot longer. Like, I still share with somebody, like... And it's this thing of, like, the fear of being walked in on never goes away. Or, like, you know, like, how long is our generation going to be in these situations where we're sharing buildings and, like... I don't know, it's definitely one of my sexual breaks is, like, the fear of being walked in on. Because I was always, experimenting in parents' houses where parents could walk in. And that's, like, something that scares me.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Anyway. I thought we could talk about things that we think we're going to do or think differently about after this book. Lucy has a hand up.
I'm going to try silicone lube. I read it. I was like, I've only ever used water-based.
I've never really used lube. Silicone.
Don't use silicone-based lube with silicone toys.
Yeah, on it.
Don't do it.
Hannah just gave Lucy her warning look. Like, don't you do that.
But apparently it dries to a really nice... like powderiness. I don't know if this is too much info, but I think lube is gross. Like, you use it and you're like, yay, and then your hand is just like,
yeah, it's horrible. What?
Oh, I love lube.
But, like, that whole stickiness of, like,
okay, you're using the wrong lube then.
It's like Durex water based.
I don't know. Maybe it just absorbs in my skin, and I'm just like, this is why I look so good.
And I feel like I've got orange juice on my hand.
My anti-wrinkle cream. Anna wipes lube into her face every morning before she wakes up. She's actually 100.
Yeah. But yeah, I was like, reading this description of silicone lube, that sounds cool. Drying to a powderiness. Mm-hmm. Could definitely do with that over a stickiness.
There is a guy in the book who gives his partner a sexual treasure hunt. Did you read that
yes!
part?
Yes.
Now, I've realised that nobody's ever done that for me, and I'm like, wow, this is something I didn't know I wanted.
I think that was, that was Henry with Camilla.
I thought it was Olivia to make her chill.
Camilla is the one with low SES.
Yeah.
So she needs a lot to get her going, and I think Henry like created the treasure hunt in order to like,
but it's really elaborate.
Increase her
doesn't
arousal.
He say as well? They walk into a room full of their friends.
Yes, he goes to other people's houses for it and stuff as well. But I don't think that's all sex. I think some of it.
Yeah,
was
like well, what no, is this like a big orgy thing? Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I totally get it. Imagine, right? Your partner has created a treasure hunt for you, and it's a sexy one. And each little thing just kind of like increases your arousal, like a little bit and a little bit. And the moment you get to like peak arousal, he's like, hey, we're at a party with all your friends, and you're just like, but I want
to... Oh, okay.
And so it kind of, like, helps, like, maintain that yeah. whilst you're, like, having to talk to your friends, but all you want to do is, like, get them home and rip their clothes off. And that then coming from someone who actually has a low SES, because then it kind of, like, builds them up so much that they become the initiator.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
That's what I think.
There's a guide in there as well that suggests that, like, ways to get yourself to 10 is to, like... push, like, start at zero and then, like, arouse yourself to a 5 and then, like, pull yourself back down and go to 2 and then pull yourself up to 6.
Oh, it's like edging,
and then,
but
yeah, so, like, but it's really, like, in-depth, like,
I read that whole
thing about edging.
I
was like, but you need, like, hours and hours, and it needs to be, like, this really long process. But it made me think of the thing from Friends where she's like, 7, 7, 7.
Yeah, I love that.
But, yeah, might try that. We'll see.
One of the things that I am... not necessarily going to do differently. I mean, I already have technically done differently. But it's not sex related. Because one of the great things that I kind of got out of this book was like some of the life advice that you can apply to non-sexual parts of your life. Because there's a huge part about stress and like how to relieve stress and how to deal with stress, which is the feeling you have. And then how that is different from dealing with the stressor, the stressor, which is the thing that is giving you the stress.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a whole other thing. One of the things that like really helped me was the fact that it was talking about how the way that your body is, or the way that you experience sexual desire, or the sensitivity of your brakes and your accelerator, just because they aren't what you want them to be doesn't mean that they're like not normal. And so in the book it kind of says that it's your resistance to like the body and what you have that causes like the pain and the struggle more than actually like the body that you do have does.
Yeah. So if you work with it instead of against it.
Exactly. So like work with it, accept it. And there are loads of possibilities for you to have like a really fulfilling and exciting and, or the, just the sex life that you want and the sex life that, makes you happy. So yeah, exactly. Don't resist it, like go with it. And like recently I've been like in a really like motivational slump, like not very busy, and like punishing myself because I'm not busy, and then like feeling shit about myself because I wasn't productive. And then I was just kind of like, I'm punishing myself, I'm like resisting what's going on. And so I kind of like stopped doing that. And I know it's like weirdly easier said than done, but I kind of was just like, yeah, okay, this is just what's happening at this time in my life for me. And that's fine. Mm. And so like my situation hasn't changed at all. Like I'm still not busy. I'm still like not being massively productive. I'm still like not really motivated. But I'm just like okay with that now. And I feel so much better.
Like that's because you just accept it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just like,
because I think the thing about letting a stress cycle complete,
That was really useful.
So just trying to halt things before they're finished. And it's like, okay, maybe I just need to stress out about this thing for a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I'm so bored of thinking about it that I'm not stressed about it anymore.
I did it yesterday.
Really?
Saw my ex, freaked out and texted Lan for ages, had a cry, wrote a song, saw Jack, felt better.
There you go.
Done. Woke up in the morning and was like,
wow, this you evaporated. And, like, you can, and then I was like, I did a stress cycle.
But you just
cycle.
Let yourself, rather than like being like, okay, I've got to block it out, I've got to blind myself, I've got to like do something, you know.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I like that. It affirms my thoughts on like just allowing yourself to feel things.
Yeah. There was some other advice in this that I thought was quite interesting. It was the no orgasm rule. So like this girl
don't
was really
pink
stressed
elephant.
About trying to get to the... Yeah,
exactly. Don't orgasm. Oh, now I'm orgasming.
So if you think don't orgasm, I did briefly read this and I remember the pink elephant.
Yeah, or at least... So basically they were like, we're going to have a sexual relationship, we're going to... Nothing's going to change in our relationship, but the girl who was like worried about coming or like orgasming is just not allowed to orgasm. So the last everything else not allowed to orgasm, which so it took all the pressure out of their sexual encounters,
yeah,
and it took all the pressure off her. And then when they did do it, it felt naughty.
I love it,
which I thought was quite sweet.
Amazing,
yeah.
One of the things that this book did give me, especially in like the weird, creepy, like fictional bits, was that like even if you're having like a really bad time in your sex life with your partner, like that doesn't mean it's like the end of the relationship.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there are so many ways that you can like discover new things about yourself and like communicate and like try new things together and work your way through it. Like it's not the end. And as someone who like put sex like quite high up in my priorities in terms of like a connection to somebody else, I'm like, okay, no, this is good, because even if my sex life goes sour, tis not the end.
Yeah
definitely.
Yeah, that's quite reassuring. Oh yeah, she says, but this brings me to an important point about genitals. They get wet sometimes and they have a fragrance, a scent, a rich and earthy banquet, redolent of grass and amber with a hint of wood, of musky wood.
Well, I don't
know. Who has ever smelled a genital that smells like that? Please raise your hand. I need
not
to hear
me. I honestly think genitals smell gross. I'm really sorry. You know, right, every person who has a vagina has probably had someone be like, oh, you smell amazing to them. I'm always like,
vaginas
really? Like, I just don't think they smell nice.
They smell like various kinds of fish depending on how recently you've washed them.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Hopefully every day.
Yeah.
Most, even, I mean,
or like,
not every
apparently
day.
They taste more irony when you're like the week before your period.
Oh, weird.
I know.
They definitely taste irony on periods.
Yeah. But yummy, that kind of delicious. 3 or 4 days before your period is due.
It's good weird.
Yeah. Oh, God. Like Popeye. Anyway, sorry. Basically, I think boys are lying, and I think it's a conspiracy. Or people that go down on girls think they're lying.
No.
This is definitely a podcast my parents can never listen to.
we need to believe people what they say. Like in one of the stories and with the non-concordance thing.
Oh, yeah.
It was just like, how am I supposed to know you're turned on if you're not wet? She's like, because I'm telling you that I am, believe me. Mm. So if someone is telling you that you smell and taste great, fucking believe them.
Okay. Different flavours for different folks.
There you go.
It sort of weirded me out. Like, sometimes if I'm, like, a bit drunk, I start thinking about how the fact that we all could be seeing different colours but using the same word for it.
I know, I love
and
that.
The same with smells. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. That
I never understood.
Fucks me up, but I love it.
The fact that I eat coriander and taste something different probably to most people who eat coriander. That's... Because I...
Weird,
apparently that's a natural thing.
It is.
Give it a Google.
It's like the blue dress situation, but for the whole world.
Yeah.
Anyway. We've gone
Sorry.
Off topic.
I was just going, because I've like cornered a lot of cornered, whatever. I don't know what you call it in the book world. Dogged? No. What is it called when you fold corners?
Folded.
Dogged is one of them.
Thank you.
It looks like dog's ears.
Yeah. And I'm just going to like go through them. One of these things that was kind of cool. You know how we like to be like, oh, there's no difference between men and women, and yet we can still see a lot of the differences, but as feminists we're like, no, but we don't want
gender
to.
Isn't a thing.
Yeah, like, oh,
but sex is a thing, gender isn't a thing.
But one of the things that like really helped me be like, oh great, this is how I can understand this now, this makes sense, is that we can see obvious group differences when we look at populations, male and female bodies. There's at least as much variation within those groups as there is between the groups.
Yeah, and she uses height as an example.
Yeah, so height is an example where it's like the average man is taller than the average woman, but actually the variation is like is bigger within the groups than it is between them.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so that I was like, oh my God, that makes so much sense.
Yeah. Isn't she like, the average man is 5'10" and the average woman is 5'4". So that's, but you can get women that are 5'11" and you can get men that are 5'5".
Yeah.
You know, like, it really does vary within that.
So that was like a, oh, light bulb or like satisfying moment where I was like, okay, this is helping me understand. Mm. I've got a bit where I've written hashtag parenting.
Oh, there like, was a bit where she was talking about how to give, too. Like, how to give the talk. And I'm just terrified of that.
Okay, this is a bit that I've, like, underlined.
I'm not going to give anybody the talk. I'm just going to link them to Hannah's channel. Never take your channel down,
God,
Hannah.
No.
Yeah, I'm...
What do you think your kids are going to think about your channel?
They're going to be so embarrassed. I can tell. They'll be like... There'll be other kids on the playground being like, oh, your mum's that one that used to make sex videos.
Your voice went so Manchester.
She does go well Manchester sometimes, doesn't
yeah.
she?
I love
it. So this is in the bit about broken stress cycles. So if your body is stressed about something but you don't allow it to complete the cycle, that's where trauma can like latch on.
Mm.
And this fucked me up and I don't know how much I believe it as well. I'm like, really? Which is like, our culture is so uncomfortable with feels, capital F, that we may even sedate people who've just been in a car accident, preventing their bodies from moving through this natural process. This well-intentioned medical intervention has the unwanted consequence of trapping survivors of traumatic injury in freeze, as in like, as a stress response, you've got flight, fight and freeze.
Which, I'm a freezer.
Okay, which is how PTSD gets a foothold in a survivor's brain. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? She does actually have a footnote for this, so we could check out her...
Jesus.
How,
but like, she was... So she said before that, the preamble to that bit was that the average person who's had severe body trauma will have a fit and then will start twitching randomly or something. There was like, your actual bodily response is really odd. And people got freaked out by it, so they started sedating people or something, thinking it wasn't necessary.
Oh, okay.
But like, actually, it's part of the stress
actually,
cycle.
That was like your body working through the stress cycle. Maybe. Yeah, I know, right? You're like, hold on a second, what?
They're drugging us for everything, aren't they? Basically, I feel like these last 2 years of reading Bang & Book Club books is like, they're drugging us, they're drugging us, they're drugging us. Like, they're drugging us so that we're fertile and then infertile. They're drugging us so we marry the wrong people. They're just We can really name this podcast, They're Drugging Us.
How freaked out I am by the idea that when I'm off and on my pill, I could date different people or be attracted to different people.
Mate, I know.
And other different people could be attracted to me. If I come off my pill and my boyfriend's just like, well, that was a fun ride. Yeah. What will I do?
Oh,
anyway, right.
Get back on it, mate.
There's a bit where
stay in the Matrix.
I am staying in the Matrix.
Safe here. There's a bit where she talks about like why some women are orgasmic from vaginal penetration and some women aren't, and different hypotheses as to why that is. And then she just says, my guess is that both of these hypotheses have merit, but you can imagine how challenging it is to get funding to do research on women's orgasm. So it may be a while before we know for sure. And I just wrote in the margin, we'll never know, sad face.
Isn't it to do with where your clitoris is in relation to your vagina?
That's one of the hypotheses.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Is about that distance.
But then surely you wouldn't be having a vaginal orgasm. You'd be having a clitoral orgasm. Because you can have... No, she tells us not to refer to them as that, doesn't she?
I can't remember.
She says, just refer to it as orgasm, because it's all the bits.
Yeah, that's true. She's like, why are we calling this a nipple orgasm? Why are we calling this something but orgasm? Because she's like, orgasm happens in your brain. It doesn't happen...
But there's a clitoral orgasm is a really distinct feeling, and a vaginal orgasm is a really distinct feeling.
Wouldn't know, only had one. Actually, no, I have.
I will talk
to
you
one.
Both more about this off podcast.
But there are some things that are still sacred.
Yeah. This has been the most in-depth discussion of my sex life.
Ooh, I know, you've proper shared. I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
I think that something this book has given me permission to do is like go away and actually think of some more sexy context. Because when I was the worksheet scared me because they were like, think of a sexy context.
And I was like, I can't think of
bed.
When people are like, where have you had sex? That's like, you know. When you're first like kind of flirting with someone, this isn't like further down the line, not just like your first thing you talk about, but like, where's the most risque place you've had sex? I'm like, I like having sex in my bed.
I was gonna say, well, I feel like from this book we need to give the listeners homework. Do you know what I mean?
Find out your SIS and your SCS rating. We'll tweet out the thing. I feel like that's a good start.
Do the quiz. And I also need to go away and think of some more sexy
context.
I think it's what about think once you figure out how sensitive your accelerator and your brakes are, figure out what are the things that hit your accelerator and try and create more of those contacts, and what are the things that hit your brakes and try and create less of those contacts.
Yeah. But what easier do I do said if than the done. Thing that hits my accelerator is the thought that I might lose them? Like, that's definitely the end of
the accelerator. Oh, wow, I think we need another book for that.
Yeah. But, like, it is. Like, when I'm like, it feels fragile.
I mean, but we're all fragile. Wait, no, Lucy, we could all die in a moment.
Yeah, but that was an unhealthy thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it was in the book as an unhealthy thing.
I'm really happy with my accelerator. Alive,
we're all probably going to be underwater in, like, 10 years. So, like, we could all, you know...
Sounds great.
Wait, I completely lost
the water levels are rising. London's going to be underwater. There you go. We're going to let... That's hot. We're going to lose each other.
Oh, okay. Okay, got it. Why did that take me so long? I was like... In my brain, I was thinking year 3000. I guess like, happening?
I took a trip to the year 3000. This podcast had gone multi-platinum.
Everybody bought our seventh erotica novel. It had outsold... That rhymes, doesn't it?
Right, ladies. Would we have sex with this book?
Most definitely yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I would.
In a sexy context.
This might be the sexiest book we've read in terms of I definitely would have sex
with this book. I'd throw a sexy treasure hunt for this book.
Assuming it didn't talk throughout the sex, tell me more things that it's already told me.
And then give me a survey to feedback on
afterwards. No, I was just going to say, I want the survey afterwards. I was like, I will have sex with this book, and then I want us to analyse it afterwards.
God. See, I'll have sex with this book so long as we've been, as long as the dates aren't continuing and I'm hearing the same things again.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, and also, don't mention Sleepy Hedgehogs.
Yeah.
And then I will have sex with the book.
I think, yes, this book is repetitive. Maybe not an enjoyable read, but because it's repetitive, like, Emily is, like, a very good teacher, and I think, like, we can all be like, oh, that's actually, like, stuck in my brain, and I can tell people about this now. I think it's
this
really
podcast talking about the book now has made me realise how valuable I found it. Mm-hmm. So even though I didn't enjoy the process of reading it, I find it really valuable, like, all the information I've
I think
absorbed.
It's given us more language and, like, how we talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I know, for me, like, I've, like, shared bits of this book with my partner, and I think that's just, like, really helped and stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a rating and a review or whatever you fancy doing.
Yeah, tell us you like us. Or if you don't, you're allowed to say you don't.
Yeah.
I don't think we can delete them, so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Enjoy that. The one unmoderated comment section. Go crazy.
Oh, God.
We also have a Twitter account. You can follow us at Banging Book Club. Mm-hmm. And we have a special announcement if you made it to the end.
Hey.
We are doing a very exciting special Christmas meetup event party.
Cocktail making
party. I'd say cocktail making party.
We're doing a cocktail making party in London.
In a bookshop.
In a bookshop. It is on Thursday, the 14th of December. The bookshop is called Travelling Through.
It's right by Waterloo Station.
Yeah, really close to Waterloo Station. It will be in the evening. And if you head over to our Twitter, there will be a link with all of the details of where you can buy tickets. Your ticket includes entry to the event, a free copy of the first book off our 2018 reading list, and a free cocktail.
Yeah.
That we make that's going to be pun related to
It's the dream.
Books.
Also, non-alcoholic cocktails coming from my table.
Yeah, exactly.
Rev rep.
Yeah, so if anyone's like, no, I want to be drunk and reading.
And I will be on the strongest cocktail table tipping you extra shots.
Yeah. Great. So we're an inclusive bunch.
Yeah.
It's going to be like an intimate affair. We're not going to be recording a podcast. It will literally just be like a Christmas party, like an end of season party, cocktails, chatting.
I'm so excited.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be really nice to hang out with everyone.
Yeah. We hope that we see you there.
Yeah, come along. Check out the Banging Book Club page.
Obviously, in the meantime, we'll hear you, see you, talk to you through podcast.
Yeah.
But just FYI.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
God, it's October. Shit. Just hit
shit the bed.
It's October.
It's almost November, mate.
I know. Terrible.
Where is 2020? What were we in 2015? 2017 gone?
Don't know. It was not a sexy context for me.
Oh.
2017.
No, 2017 wasn't a sexy context. Mm. Unless you like your sexy contacts with blonde toupees and lots of violence and conflict.
Okay, we need to go because I need to talk about whether Melania is a plant and I need to talk to you about that.
Okay, anyway.
Bye! Is Melania? Have you seen all this?
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.